Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Well, how you doing there? This is Matthew McConaughey, and you are listening to the Court Case Podcast. All right, all right, all right.
Hello, and welcome to the Court Case Podcast with me, your host, James Court.
And Sweet Tea.
Today, we are joined by a very special guest. We're going to be talking to Gavin, the male mental health coach, and he's going to be talking about his harrowing story, as well as male mental health and a ton of other things. It's a really interesting episode, and it's all coming right after this. So, hello, Gavin. How are you doing today?
I'm very well, thank you, James. How are yourself?
We are great. Welcome to the Court Case Podcast. It is great to have you on. So, what drew you to our podcast, first off?
It was your locability, actually, to be fair. And, and it was the court case name that inspired me to contact you, I think it was. It was a good little name.
Yeah.
To relate to whatever I do.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, we've had a few guests on that have sort of fit the Court Case name quite well. Like we've had Jeffrey Deskovic, who was wrongfully convicted, wasn't
yes,
he?
Yes, that was cool.
Sent to prison for 16 years for a crime he didn't commit. He fit the name very well, but which was really interesting. But you, yourself, you've got a very harrowing story. I watched like the video that you sent me and heard your story, and I would love for you to tell it for us and give us a bit about yourself.
Great stuff. Mm. Well, my story started with my mum and my mum's trauma. In 1953, over in Ireland, she was handed in as what they call a foundling.
Yeah.
So she didn't know her biological parents. She was handed into a church in Galway and then moved up to a mother and baby's children's home in a place called Tuam in the north end of Galway. And they obviously bring children up. So my mum was brought up in a convent system over in Ireland, and she was shipped from pillar to post, if you like, and moved from this convent to that convent to this convent. And I don't know if you know any of the stories of the convents in Ireland. They weren't the nicest of places to be growing up in.
Right.
They were generally run like prisons. Okay. Most of the children, most of the mothers had a number as opposed to a name.
She
had a pretty tough grinding with that. And then about when she was about 5 or 6, she was put on an aeroplane. And the thought was she was going to America, because a lot of the children from Ireland at the time were either sent to America or sent to Australia.
Okay.
So that was the way it kind of worked, you know. So she then was taken off the plane for some bizarre, strange reason and was put in the car. And they gave her a bag of sweets and said, oh, you know, we're taking you to your new mammy. So they then shipped her across to the other side of Ireland, a little place called Wexford, which is just underneath Dublin there.
Right.
And she was put with a foster family and supposed to be adopted by the foster family.
Okay.
Of course, this never happened because the foster family never provided any paperwork to say that they were legally married. Right. So this is kind of where it all went to shite from there on in, to be fair.
Right.
They basically treated her like a slave on the farm.
Oh,
She would be raped on a weekly basis by the foster father, and she would be beaten by the foster mother if she ever voiced her opinion.
Wow,
and this was
Jesus.
On a weekly basis, you know.
Bless her.
Yeah.
It was a pretty tough grind, you know. And then what happened was when anyone local or anyone started sort of prying into what they were doing and why this daughter was there and, you know, things like that, they moved, and they did this four times.
Wow.
And they, anytime anyone started any asking any questions or thinking like, this is a bit weird, why this girl's getting treated like this, you know, they'd move. And they hit a brick wall when they moved to the last place because they couldn't sell it and they got stuck there.
Okay.
And this place is literally, I mean, I don't know if you've ever been to Ireland or anyone's been to Ireland, but this is like rural Ireland. I mean, you know, there's rolling mountains up in the background, stone walls everywhere. The houses are little tiny cottages with one door and one window, you know. And as you walk in the house, it's very old and decrepit, and there was a little staircase to go up the thing, and everything sort of revolves around the kitchen, you know, like, and it's all stone floors and such of the like big bradle wheel fires, open fires, and everything happened around the fire, you know, that's where you've done your washing, your cooking, your cleaning and everything.
Right, yeah. I see, yeah.
So she was in there with them, and then they had the priest come and visit mum one time, and the foster mother put her in a trunk in the front kitchen and made her sit in the trunk and said to her, if you open your mouth when the priest is here, I will kill you.
Whoa.
That's her exact words of what she said to her. So you can imagine, like, my mum's 9 years old, 10 years old at the time. You know, imagine saying that to a child, you know, you'd be petrified. You know, it's just immense trauma, an immense bullying, you know, and abuse, like huge abuse, you know.
Yeah, Christ.
So the priest has come in, and my mum's in the trunk while the foster mother's sitting on the trunk. While the priest was there asking her how Mary is, you know, because the priest used to go around like a social worker would in an environment in this day, and just it's like a checkup courtesy call thing, you know.
Mm.
And she was sat in the trunk while she was sat on top of it. My mum was hiding in the trunk, and the priest said to the foster mother, you know, where's Mary?
Yeah,
she's in the way up the road now, they're playing with the children, and all, like, you know, she's grand, she's having a time of her life while she's in the trunk with the priest talking to her.
Jesus Christ.
Fuck.
And then any time, you know, my mum would voice her, because she's quite happy enough to open her and voice her upbringing, you know. She's quite bullshit like that, my mother. She'd get beaten. I mean, she was put out in the dogs to sleep with the dogs out in the pen and all sorts of stuff. It was horrific, like what they did to her.
Ridiculous.
And there was one stage there where the foster father beat her so badly, she sustained a boil on her leg and bruises all the way up her leg.
Right?
Oh. So the foster mother... reaction to that, or her method for fixing that boil, she couldn't obviously take her to the doctors or the hospital because they'd start asking questions as to why mum's got these bruises all over her body, you know?
Yeah.
So she got a hot poker out of the fire and decided to pulse that into my mum's boil to burn it off of her leg.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And she done all the work on my mum, on her leg at home. So my mum was walking around with this boil on her leg. She couldn't sit down. You know, there was many a time where mum was in that much pain from the beatings that she gets. She couldn't sit down. She couldn't ride the bike, nothing, you know. They used to make her walk to school, and the school was 10 miles away from the house. So she'd walk to school. She used to do a 20-mile round trip walking every day just to go to school.
That's ridiculous.
That's crazy.
Yeah. It's so awful.
It's horrible to hear.
How did your mum get out of this?
Yeah.
There was an incident in the local village where someone tried to grab my mum off the bike.
Right.
And to this day, we still don't know who that person was. It could have been, you know, a local person that realised that there was a lot of abuse going on and they weren't treating her the way they should have treated her. Or it could have been her own biological mother, but we still don't know to this day who it could have been.
Right.
So story goes that someone tried to grab my mum off the bike on this particular occasion in the village.
Hmm.
So they were going up to the church. This was a weekly thing. You go to the church on a Sunday, you know, and then she used to go into the village and buy all her sundries or whatever she needed.
Hmm.
So they've turned up at the church, and my mum, the priest has looked at my mum and thought, oh, she looks a bit like flustered. So the priest has asked her if she's okay. And mum's voiced her opinion and said, someone's just tried to grab me off the back of the bike.
Hmm.
So the foster mother backhanded her in the middle of the church and knocked her clean out in the church on a Sunday in front of everyone.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. So then, obviously, the authorities and the priests and stuff thought that that's not right, you know. Yeah. So we're taking her away, we're taking her back. And then she was then moved into what they call an industrial school. There was a lot of industrial schools in Ireland. They were pretty much run like prisons as the mother and baby homes were, right. You know, in all the institutions around Ireland.
Okay.
And there was a place called St. Joseph's in Kilkenny, and it was an industrial school. Ironically, they took my mum away from this abusive couple. And in the summer, they'd send her back there for her summer stays away when the school was closed.
That doesn't make
Why would you do
that? That doesn't make any
what?
Sense.
It doesn't make no sense.
No, it doesn't.
You know, it's just odd. Yeah. It's just odd, you know. And I mean, even I've met the foster. I've been there. I've met the foster mother. I've been to that cottage. I've seen it firsthand myself, you know, and I've met. And she, you know, I'm talking real old school, proper, like, farmer lady, you know, with the wellies and the pinny and no teeth and you know yellow hair where she used to smoke 1,000 fags a day sort of thing, you know. And it was just insane how my mum would take me there as a child, because that was the closest thing to a mother she ever had, you know. She didn't know nothing else.
That's so sad.
So I mean, the abuse she sustained and the trauma she sustained from that couple is just, you know, I mean, I'm sort of milling over it at the moment. I mean, it's, I could go great in depth of it, but you know, it's there's so many avenues to the story. It's going to be in a book in the near coming future. But you know, we've got a lot of hurdles to cross before we get to that stage. But
yeah,
so it was pretty tough. I mean, she didn't leave them until she was about 15, I think, or 16 when she left the institution or the industrial school. She was 16 when she left there. She then went into work in a cafe locally in Kilkenny.
Right.
And the couple provided her with accommodation and, you know, living expenses, et cetera, et cetera. And would you believe that the guy that owned that place raped her? So she was so used to kind of that environment, it kind of became the norm to her. You know, she's just sort of, oh, well, it is what it is, and this is always going to be like it. So after that, she then realised that she shouldn't be staying there, and she moved to Dublin with a friend of hers.
Okay.
I think she stayed in Dublin for a few years, and then she came over to London. And she didn't really like London. It was too big city-ish, you know. She'd grown up in the country. So, you know, growing up in the country out in the middle of nowhere and then moving to London is a bit of a shocker, you know.
Yeah, definitely.
So she, and then she didn't like London, so she moved down to Bognor.
Right.
And then obviously, I think, you know, 10 years later, she had me, you know, with my dad, or 5 years, I think. 5 years she'd been here, and then she had me with my dad.
Yeah.
And then to put a huge spanner in the work, my dad disappeared when I was about eight months old, 10 months old, something like that. So my mum had to then bring me up on her own, you know, which is quite tough, because she's one dealing with all her own abuse, like all her own trauma and all her own emotional battles.
Yeah.
And then having to raise a child on her own as well. You know, so you can imagine, pretty tough to do.
Bless her.
And she's a tough old cookie.
Yeah,
I'll tell
I can
you
imagine.
She's 3 foot tall, but I'll tell you, she's got some fire in her. You know, I've seen big grown men run away from her.
I'm interested. How old were you when you last saw this foster mum?
Yeah.
Good question. I'd say about 21, something around that time.
Okay, so quite an adult then.
Yeah.
And
How
what feelings were going through your mind when you see this woman that had done these things to your mum?
You're a spiteful, horrible little lady.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a polite way of putting
it. In kind words, yeah. And I did want to sort of grill her, you know, but you can imagine this is like rural Ireland. I mean, I've grown up with the Irish accent all my life, so I understand most things, but this lady's got no teeth, you know, and she's spoke extremely, extremely deep Irish accent. So I couldn't understand a word she was saying anyway.
Yeah.
And obviously my mum didn't want me to say anything, you know. Mm. She was like, just leave it, you know, it's not worth the hassle.
Right.
So, you know, and then she passed there, I think about 10 years ago, maybe about 10 years ago, I'd say.
Okay.
And we went into the foster home where she was staying. Not the foster home, sorry, the nursing home where she was staying.
Yeah.
And we went and seen her, bearing in mind they said she had a lot of dementia and she couldn't speak. She'd lost the power of speech.
Right.
When I walked into that nursing home and she saw my face, there was a shock, horror look on her face. And she knew exactly who I was.
Yeah.
There was no dementia kicking in there, I'll tell you that. She knew
exactly. Yeah.
So it was tough. It was really tough to stomach. Really tough to stomach.
Did she never face any consequences for these actions then?
No.
No sign of remorse at all?
No, none.
Jesus.
That is shocking.
What about the father? Well, the stepfather.
Well, ironically, he was run over by a horse and cart, so fate would have it, and karma would come back to kick him in the arse. And the cart, he was drunk coming back from the pub. He fell off the cart. The cartwheel went over his head, straight across his neck. Goodbye.
Wow.
So, that is painful, but he deserves it.
Yeah, that's what you get, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Hear, hear.
Yeah. So how does that drive what you do now? So what do you do now? Tell us a bit about that.
Okay, so now I coach men to overcome abuse and trauma that they've dealt with growing up as a child.
Amazing.
I do that because I've had 30 years of experience dealing with that.
Yeah.
And it was only up until last year that I realized I had a breakdown last year, and it hit me hard. It hit me really hard.
Yeah.
And what I'd been doing is what Tony Robbins likes to call it, is emotional stacking for 35 years.
Damn.
My wife hadn't seen me cry. Me and my wife have been together 14 years. She hadn't seen me cry once.
Whoa.
Not many people had, to be fair. And when I started crying, and because what happened was, is obviously we was in lockdown, you know, and I've been self-employed all my life. So I've always been busy. I've never had time to sit down and think, you know, because I'm always there to do. And I mean, I put my mum to bed for 30 years crying for her mother, you know, so I'd embraced a lot of my mum's trauma, you know. And then when I was growing up, I'd have a lot of babysitters because obviously mum was on her own and whatever.
Yeah.
So I was abused by two of these babysitters as I was growing up.
Okay.
So I buried that as a kid because my mum had been through so much abuse and trauma herself. The last thing she wants to hear is her own son telling her about stuff that he'd been through.
Absolutely,
you know?
Yeah, I get that, yeah.
Yeah. So, and obviously I wanted to comfort my mum, you know, and I sort of had to play adult, if you like, for my mum in such a way because there was no one else there to do it for her. So I had to be strong and bold for my mum and consolidate my mum when she was crying for her own mum. You know, so I couldn't really blurt out to her, oh, you never guess what, my mum was sexually abused by two of the different babysitters on two different occasions, male and female.
Yeah.
And then what I found was, is as I grew up, you kind of it was like you put on a mask, you know, you put on a brave face and you become overexerted in your personality because you don't want no one to ask you that question. So you avoid that at all costs.
Absolutely, yeah,
and
I get that.
You perceive to be someone else, you know, because you don't want no one asking you that question, you know. So I buried all this, like I say, for 35 years. And where I'd had that time of sitting at home and not doing anything, because I've got a full-time job now, I was getting paid. So it was like, you know, I've got nothing to do. And I've never in my whole life ever sat down and done nothing.
Yeah.
You know, it's like I've got lint in my pants and flat out all the time. So sitting down for that 3 weeks, all my thoughts started coming back to haunt me. And it was like I'd been hit by a steam train at 3,000 miles an hour.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
And my world just sunk around me. And I was in this glazed fog for months.
Yeah.
and months. And now I've got my own children. So you don't reflect on your own childhood until you have your own children, you know, and then when you have your own children, it makes you reflect on what it was like with, for you growing up, you know. And like I say, all these thoughts and all these feelings and all this emotion came back and kicked me in the ass like a peach.
Yeah.
It was intense, insanely intense. There's no other way I can really put that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was intense. And I was, I didn't know where to look. I didn't know where to go. Didn't know who to speak to. I, you know, I didn't know whether to laugh, fart or cry, you know, it was that. So, and then once I started crying, it was like endless, James. It was like every hour, it's just boom, 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 boom. Because I'd spent so long, I'd spent the best part of 30 years not crying.
Yeah,
you know,
that's horrible.
Yeah, I get you.
Yeah, it was like open the floodgates. Boom, 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 boom. You know, it was tough. So my drive now is, you know, I'm doing a lot of podcast speaking and stage presence, because if my story can inspire at least one guy to not go and take his own life, I've succeeded in my mission.
Definitely,
you know,
yeah.
Because the rate of male suicide is shocking. Yes. I mean, it's 1 an hour just in the UK. You know, it's absolutely shocking.
Yeah, I would.
So I'm sharing my story to inspire other men. It's okay. It's okay to share your story. You've got to let them emotions out. You've got to release them feelings, because if you're carrying them feelings, it's causing you so much health problems. It's untrue. I like to look at it, it's like if you've got a rucksack on your back and the rucksack's full of stones, and every stone is an emotion, and the bigger the emotion, the bigger the stone. And you can imagine carrying a rucksack on your back full of stones. It's heavy, very heavy. And then the more you add to that, if you don't release them emotions and release them of feelings, you're just adding stones to that backpack all the time.
Yeah.
And then you get heavier and heavier and heavier, you know. And I mean, you may have seen it. You can see it a mile away from guy with, like muscle dispensation. So you'll have a shoulder dip on one side, or your hips will be a bit crooked and they may walk a bit funny. And that's from the back problems and the neck pain from the emotions. I believe in that 100%.
Right.
A lot of your muscular pains that you have can be connected to an emotion that you've never dealt with, or feelings that you've never dealt with, or trauma that you've never released.
That's crazy. You know? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
It's actually a thing. Yeah. I didn't know that either until recently when I started studying that.
Yeah.
That's so interesting.
Yeah, it's actually a thing. And more so your guts. More so your guts. I mean, if you have gut problems or anything like that, that generally is connected to an emotion or a feeling that you've not dealt with or not processed.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you can have times where your mental health makes you not want to eat.
Yeah.
You don't want to eat too much. It can affect
constantly
everything.
Shitting.
I think
it's
becoming more apparent than ever how connected your mental health is to the rest of your being and your health in general. I think.
Yeah. Well, this is the thing. Like, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, you never heard men's mental health.
No,
just didn't. Like, it was like it didn't exist, but it's always been there. It's been there for centuries, but it's never been spoken about, you know. And I think this pandemic has opened a window for men like myself to be able to open it up and release it, you know, and share their message. It's now a thing. People understand it now, whereas before, you know, I grew up in the construction industry, and you daren't open your mouth and say anything about how you're feeling. You would get ridiculed, you know, you just would, you know. So and it's the thing, you know, when you go down the pub with your mates, you go down the pub, you talk about football, or you talk about work, or you talk about, you know, the next big thing or whatever, you know, you talk about women or, you know, alcohol, whatever. You don't turn up in the pub with your mates and go, oh, guess what? I was sexually abused when I was a kid and this, that and the other, you know.
Yeah.
You don't talk about stuff like that with your mates, you know. It's just not the done thing, you know.
Yeah.
But I think now it's becoming a bit more, like, mainstream. It's becoming a bit more
socially acceptable.
Open. Yeah, it's more socially acceptable. Well done. That's the word. Yeah, but it is. It's becoming more socially acceptable for people and men to actually talk about their feelings and their emotions. Hmm. Because I know myself, if you're carrying that burden, it can make you physically ill.
Yeah.
Physically ill. Not just mentally ill, physically ill.
Yeah.
Because I, growing up as a kid, I received, sexual abuse, physical abuse, mental abuse, you name it, emotional abuse, it was a struggle. It took me, like I say, it took me 35 years to realise that it had actually affected me.
Yeah. When you think about it, it's such a ridiculously long amount of time.
That is so long.
To come to that realisation.
Mm.
It sucks. It does.
Are you happier for it now or?
Oh, massively.
Yeah.
Mm. Massively. Yeah. Honestly, it feels like I've been turned upside down and spun around a few times and then stood back up on end again. And it's like, oh, yeah. Now I've got a vision. Like, oh yeah, I can see the road now. It's like I can see the light at the end of the tunnel. I've made it to the end of the tunnel.
Yeah,
oh, that's great.
And like I say, my drive is the rate of men taking their own life is just insane. And if, like I say, if I can give my story and it inspires at least one man to not want to do that, then I've succeeded.
Definitely.
I don't need big fancy cars and big fancy houses, and I don't need to be rich to be successful.
No.
I'm happy to be successful in helping other men overcome their abuse and trauma.
I got some facts up in preparation. I wanted to talk to you. You mentioned already about like male suicide rate, and I got some numbers here. In 2014, 4,623 men took their own life, which is 12 every day, and which is one man every 2 hours. And in our age group, so 18 to 45, 76% or sort of something like, it's like 70% of deaths are like suicide. It's the main cause of death among people our age, which one, I just think is ridiculous. That people are raised, the main way that we're dying is from ourselves. But I just wanted to like ask you, why do you think that is? Why do you think so many men like that's how it's ending for them?
Media poisoning is what I like to call it.
Mm.
Media poisoning. Yeah. Because you, being a man, you have to be the guy that is bold and strong. Yeah. I'm the man who can look after my family. I'm the man that has to provide. You have to provide. You have to be tough. This tough guy macho image thing that's been, portrayed over the media, and that's why I call it media poisoning, because it is just that.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
And that's why I like the podcast world, because it's very niche and specific. You can talk about these things. You wouldn't hear this stuff mentioned on BBC Radio 1. It's just amazing. When you look at like the news and stuff, I mean, I don't watch the news. I don't read the paper, because I just believe it is just, it's poison,
Yeah.
And some people get milled up on that, and they spend so much time thinking about all the stuff that's going on in the news, they actually forget to live their life.
Yeah,
because they're worried about, I can't go out of the house because I might get this, and I can't go there because this might happen. And, it's the fear factor, they're fear-mongering people into believing that you basically can't leave the house unless or you'll die. It's like that, isn't it? And I think especially more so over the last sort of 18 months or whatever it's been, they've all been talking about this COVID thing and vaccine thing, and now it's the war in Afghanistan and all this sort of stuff, but they never talk about the male suicide rate ever.
No,
you never hear. They might mill over it for about 30 seconds. Oh yeah, never saw it. But the sun's out tomorrow, so we'll all go and get our sun hats on and sit on the beach. It's like avoid it, and that's like I say, that's my drive. That's why I want to change it. That's why I want to make this a big thing and to stop that from happening.
It needs to change.
Definitely, because I often find when there is issues to do with things like mental health and stuff, I do find at the moment a lot of the time it is geared to women and stuff and I do feel like it needs to be balanced out a bit. Do you consider yourself like a feminist, or do you think feminism helps this at all?
I do think feminism helps this because, you know, you've got, you there is men out there that do feel more comfortable talking to women. Yeah. And women are obviously a lot more emotionally connected than men are, you Absolutely. Know, so the women will listen to you before a man will all day long, you know, and they'll understand your meaning more, you know, whereas a man will turn around and go, oh, shut up, you'll be fine, mate, just get on with it, don't fucking worry about it. That's the last thing you want to hear when you're depressed.
Absolutely.
You know, keep your chin up, mate, you'll be fine. Yeah, have a whiskey, carry on, you know. That's not what you need to hear, you know. You want someone to sit down and go, come on, mate, tell me about it. And actually really listen, like really, really listen.
Yeah.
Not just like, oh, yeah, all right, mate, yeah. So, and like, I think the worst thing is advice, you know, like, because you're giving them your advice on your opinion of what you think. Yeah. Not what they want to know, you know?
That is true. So
I think it's important to ask the right questions and just ask your mate how he's feeling. If you've not seen him for a couple of weeks, ring him and ask him why you haven't seen him for a couple of weeks. What's up, mate? You know? Definitely. What's up? You know? And I think that should be the major thing that most men turn around to each other and say now. Like, are you okay?
Yeah.
Like, do you want to sit down and talk about anything? And 9 times out of 10, you go, no, I'm all right, mate. Yeah, no, I'm all right. I'm sound. When really they're not. So you kind of have to like
force it out.
Prize it out of them. Yeah. Like, tell me what's wrong with you, you know?
Yeah.
But it's just like, it's because it's not the done thing. But like I say, now it's so big and widespread in the media. People are starting to take it. What was that you said earlier?
Socially acceptable.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's becoming more socially acceptable, which I think is amazing. You know, I really, really do. And and it's really, really important. And you know, no disrespect to the NHS or any of the people that work in the NHS, but their whole system of dealing with it doesn't work. Yeah. It doesn't work, you know. I mean, when you ring them and say, I've got a mental health issue, oh, well, let's make your appointment. We'll speak to you in 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. That guy stood at the top of the building now. He ain't got 3 weeks to wait. Yeah. He wants to jump off the building now.
Yeah.
You know, he's ringing you and asking if you've have you had any suicidal thoughts? And of course they say no.
Yeah.
You know, because they're too proud to say, oh, yeah, I've been having loads of suicide thoughts. Like, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, and then we'll ring you back in 3 weeks. 3 weeks is too late.
Yeah.
It needs to be done now, you know. And then the other thing as well, like they will... Oh, have you taken any medication? Take the medication. Take the medication. Here's the drugs. Here's the drugs. Here's the drugs. Drugs don't work. Drugs don't work. Yeah. You know, they've proved it. You can see these people have been taking them 10, 20 years and they're still depressed. You know, they're probably more depressed on the pills than what they was before they started. Mm. You know?
Mm.
Yeah.
But they will constantly keep trying to push them pills on you. Yeah. Constantly. Because they're a business. They're a business. That's how they make their money. You know, they're trying to make money.
Yeah,
that's what they're there for. Yeah. You know, I mean, don't get me wrong, they're amazing. When your arm or your leg's falling off, fair enough. But when it comes to mental health, they have to really understand and listen to what that guy wants.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, is there a small change a man could make to their everyday life that could help their mental health even just a little bit?
Oh, good question.
Very good question. Concentrate on your thoughts.
Right.
Consciously know what your thoughts are doing.
Yeah.
Consciously.
Okay.
Because if you know where your thoughts are going, you know where your head's going. And a journal is very important.
Yeah. Now,
when they said that to me, I went, fuck off. Journal. I ain't writing down shit. But it's really, really powerful. It's really important just to write your thoughts down. And more so first thing in the morning. That's really important. Right. Like first thing in the morning, get up. Don't look at your phone. Don't look at your phone. Because as soon as you pick your phone up, the first thing you do is go on Facebook. Mm. And then you're embracing everyone else's troubles before you've even started your day, you know?
Yeah.
And you're like, even if you're not doing it consciously, subconsciously, your mind's going, oh, that person did this and that person did this, you know? Mm. And then it's like, you see all these posts on there, this guy's got this nice Ferrari, and he's like, oh, look at me on the beach with my pina colada and all that sort of stuff. You know? And in reality, that's a green screen, and that's not a pina colada at all. It's a bottle of red wine. Or, do you know what I mean? Like, it's just, there's a lot of false pretenses on Facebook when, and in reality, you know, they're struggling, you know? And I do think that's really important to not get subjected into scrolling Insta or Facebook, because you're burying your head in other people's shit. Definitely. And you don't need to be doing that. You need to be dealing with your own shit first, you know, before worrying about everyone else's.
That's so true.
Journaling was really, really good. Journaling was really good. And then walking, just getting up in the morning early and go for a little walk. Before you do anything, before you talk to anyone, before you look at your phone, anything, just break from reality and go for a walk and listen to your own thoughts and know what your own thoughts are doing. Because really, if you're living in your head, if you're in your head, that's the biggest pain you can have if you're living in your head, because you're milling over the same shit over and over and over again.
Yeah.
You know? And then you're beating yourself up. The only person that's destroying you is you, because you're beating your own head.
Yeah. Like,
and then you start getting paranoid and you think, oh, he's looking at me funny, or they've said this and they're talking about me, and like that bloke's looking at me, you know, and you imagine all these things in your own head, and you can paint these great pictures. The mind is so powerful that you can imagine so much stuff in your own head. You know, you could end up just kicking the shit out of yourself just by putting all these thoughts in your head.
Yeah.
You know, but for me, the walking and the journaling was what, I mean, and countless counseling sessions and therapy sessions and, you know, such of the like.
Yeah. But that's great. No, that's great advice. Do you have any like recent success stories with your coaching that you could share?
Yeah.
I do, but I'm very, very, I'm very, very,
customer
confidentiality.
Right, fair enough.
Yeah, fair enough.
So, yeah, I don't ever mention any of my clients at all to anything or about anyone. Nothing. I just don't, because I know what it's like, do you know, and I've been there.
Yeah.
But I will say, with what I've been doing, the feedback I've been getting off a lot of people has been absolutely amazing. I mean, people are like, for what you're doing and sharing your story, that can help men just on its own, just by you sharing a story, you know, that can change their life. It can, you know, and hopefully it does. That's my aim. You know, that's what I'm doing. You know?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's really, really good. Really, really good.
That is good. How is your mum now?
She's very well. She's very well. She's still trooping along, you know. She's 3 foot tall, but a 20 foot heart, you know.
Good.
She's just diamonds. I love her to pieces. Yeah, so for what she's been through, to still stand tall and carry on. Because even in mum's environment, you know, a lot of the girls that she went into the convents with or grew up in the convents with, they didn't make it. You know, they took their own life, and you can understand why, you know, because of the stuff they went through. They just couldn't handle it. They just couldn't, you know. And some of them went to have their own children taken away from them as well, you know. So they were taken away from their parents, and then they went and had their own children, and their own children were taken away from them, you know.
Mad.
So, I mean, I've been listening to stories from a lot of these guys that were in the convents over the years, and honestly, they're just intense, you know. I've been listening to these stories since I was a kid, and some of them are shocking, absolutely shocking. It just makes you wonder how people can be that evil to people.
Absolutely. I don't get it.
There's a lot of that been going around. I mean, it was recently the 20th anniversary of 9/11.
Yeah.
And I often at this time of year, I often think that I see things like that, and like the story you've shared and stuff, and
it makes you so like grateful and appreciative, doesn't it?
It does make you grateful and appreciative. But yeah, I do constantly think like, how can people do such things to other people?
I'm glad you said grateful, actually, because I'll add that when you said about what's helped you overcome it and what message have you got for other guys as well. And I said about the journaling and the walking, that would be my key 3 point, you know, is be grateful for everything you have.
Yeah.
The way I look at it, right, is if you get up in the morning, you're breathing and you're walking, what else do you need?
Yeah.
You know, like, be grateful that you're breathing and walking,
you're alive,
and you've got a roof over your head and food on the table. If you've got a roof over your head, food on the table, you're breathing and you're walking, you're the richest man in the world. You don't need anything else.
Very true.
You know?
Yeah.
Be grateful for that. You know, you've got everything, you know?
Definitely.
I love that.
Because there's a lot of people in this world that don't have that, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. That is a great message to come towards the end of the podcast with.
Yeah.
It's been great having you on. How can people find you if they want to use your services?
Anywhere. Google, Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, LinkedIn. Yeah, you name it. All of them. Yeah, Gav M, the identity coach.
Okay.
Cool.
Got it. Gav M, the identity coach. Perfect.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So yeah, Google me, like literally anywhere. I'm on all the platforms. You name it, I'm on there.
Perfect. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. It's been really interesting hearing
really
your story.
Really interesting, yeah.
It's been a pleasure. It's been a pleasure.
Great.
Yeah, it's really nice.
Good.
Yeah, great stuff.
I hope you continue to have so much success with your business, because it really is a great cause.
Yeah, well, next year I'm hitting the stages without fail.
Wow.
Out of all the years that I've been growing up, I've noticed that I have two major skills. One is talking. You might not notice that. But the other one is networking and building relationships with people. You know, they're the one, two things that I've gained from my ancestral heritage. You know, I was born to be a natural speaker, you know, and I was born to network with people and communicate with people. I mean, I can have conversations with people who can't even speak English, you know.
Yeah. So, I think that those two are the best skills to have, surely.
Definitely. Yeah.
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 Yeah. So yeah, I'm hitting the stages next year. That's going to be my big mission, my big goal for next year.
That's exciting.
Yeah, I hope that goes
amazing. The message. Yeah.
Yeah. Good luck with that.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you so much again.
Pleasure.
It's been amazing. I loved that guy.
What an amazing guy. He's lovely.
Yeah, such a positive and great person, even though he's been through so much.
That was so empowering.
That was. And
yeah.
Just, this is what I love about Court Case. We go through the previous episode where we're just talking about sex for an hour.
Yep.
And we've got this episode where we've got such an...
a more serious, raw topic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And, you know...
I was just enjoying listening. Like, we didn't speak that much. Like, he would just take the reins. And that was so enjoyable.
Definitely. And, I mean, if anyone needs to use his services, I would please think about doing it. And it's Gav M, the identity coach, as he said earlier. And he's on most of the social medias. So please consider doing that. And we will be back next week with some Court Case goodness. Follow us on our social medias at Court Case Podcast. And we will see you all very, very soon.
Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.